Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on when you are watching this. I'm Frank Vaughn. It is December 8th, 10:10 a.m. I will be on the radio tomorrow morning with Mark Petroni, again, one of the few, that's Saga 960 out of Toronto, one of the few radio shows where you can actually speak truth in this country. God knows how long it's going to last. I mean, the things that are discussed aren't supposed to be discussed in public. So it's pretty wonderful right now. Take advantage of it while you can. Now, before we get into the election in the United States and how important it is, which, by the way, is still ongoing, it's not a decided thing. Joe Biden is not yet president-elect. There are a lot of challenges that have to be worked through. And if the media was honest, they would tell you that. But I want to start here. This is a bit of a social issue right now that's coming up because of lockdowns and COVID-19. Now, I covered on this channel how there was a woman in Canada who was coached into taking her own life, basically committing suicide by her family and doctors, not because she was unwell, but because she wanted to avoid another lockdown and the stresses that come with that. We see drug use, we see substance abuse, we see domestic abuse, we see all of these consequences of lockdowns, but the media doesn't talk about it. All they talk about is vaccination and COVID-19, a respiratory infection with a 1% fatality rate, which mostly 80% of the fatalities are occurring in long-term care facilities. So this was a video by, I might get the pronunciation massacred here, but Kulvinder Kaur. Cruel and inhumane, these horrific lockdowns restrictions will be one of the darkest times in human history. Will history see you complicit in these crimes against humanity and willful ignorance and deafening silence, or will you be on the right side of history? Now, the video, if you play it, is of, I'm assuming, a daughter or a family member trying to do the best that they can. It actually is a daughter doing the best they can for their mother outside of a retirement home facility. My retweet was this: stop sticking your parents in retirement homes. We used to take care of our families ourselves until taxes, inflation, and culture told us it was appropriate to stuff them in centralized facilities to wait until they die. Don't be surprised when this happens. So what's the issue here? A mother, visibly in declining health, is being told, or the daughter of the mother is being told by the staff that everything's fine with mom. She's not allowed to see mom. She's not allowed to have access to her mom. And in the video, they cart her mom off against her wishes. Now, look, it's cruel and inhumane. I get it. But there's an element in our society, it's cruel and inhumane to stick your parents in a retirement home. We should be doing this ourselves. Now, granted, some parents make it very difficult to try and take care of them. They will resist you every step of the way. But for those people who have cooperative parents, there's a way to plan ahead. You know your parents are going to get old. You know they're going to require increasing care. They're going to require a similar amount of care that it took to get you into this world. And the least you can do is take care of them if they will allow you to do it. It's something that you plan for throughout life. But when you surrender your parents, when you surrender your loved ones to an old folks' home, a centralized facility where they literally go and they wait to die, when you do that, you're surrendering your control, you're surrendering your custody, and you're surrendering your duty. So don't be surprised when your parents get beat up by staff. It's not to say that all staff are bad, but this happens all the time. There's all sorts of abuse in retirement homes. Don't be surprised that under a lockdown, under these mandatory draconian systems, these things that are happening to us right now in the name of fighting a respiratory infection, don't be surprised if that denies you access to your own parents. You surrendered control, and you surrendered control for more money than it would probably cost to take care of them in home. The next thing I want to get into briefly is Bitcoin, because you always see people saying Bitcoin is a scam. This is a tweet I put out this morning. Bitcoin is a scam, they say, as they spend their fiat, created out of thin air, subdividing the wealth of the masses and giving it to banking houses, backed as it is by nothing but debt. Now, if you want to store value, there's things that you can already do. You can buy tools that you can make money with. You can buy real estate. You can buy gold. You can buy silver. But what is Bitcoin and what is blockchain? Because the two concepts are firmly linked together. Essentially, in my opinion, they are the future. Until quantum computing becomes something that you can carry on a handheld device, blockchain is one of the most secure formats of data storage and data transfer and value transfer that you can possibly conceive of. Now, the public in general has no idea what blockchain is. They just see Bitcoin and they think, why am I buying this piece of vapor? I was there at first. When I was first introduced to the concept of cryptocurrency, the guy who introduced me to, we argued for days, me saying that it was nothing but vaporware and him saying, no, it's something more than that. You got to look into it. Well, I did look into it, and that's one of the instances in my life where I had to correct myself, because blockchain can secure elections very easily. Blockchain can modernize democracy and republicanism very easy. If you're concerned if you understand the Electoral College in the United States, which we're going to discuss more in this video, if you understand why that was built in, you'll understand that blockchain can build in those concepts as well to prevent the dictatorship of the one and prevent the dictatorship of the many. There's a lot of ways it can be deployed. But Bitcoin, when people say that Bitcoin is a scam, at the same time as they are carrying bank balances or debts, doesn't matter which, in fiat currencies, which is the dollars that you have in your pocket, those dollars are backed by nothing but government debt. It literally is the government creates debt, and the central bank prints money and buys the government debt, and then that goes to the government programs, or the central bank prints money, hands it directly to the banks, and then they loan it back to you at interest. It's all debt-based. It's nothing. The paper money in your pocket, the digits in your bank account, they're backed by nothing. The only thing that makes them work is trust, and that the public believes that they work. Bitcoin is superior in that it has an open algorithm that you can see. It has a supply that you can see. It has a fixed value. The people who are invested in it, trying to store value in it, all agree in a trusting system that it has some intrinsic worth. Now, it's early, even though it came out years ago. Blockchain and Bitcoin are very early in their trajectory. This is like the internet in 1993. Like, we're talking early before wide development. Once people understand that governments are deploying blockchain, that everything from the United States government to the United Nations to the Danish government, they're using blockchain to track value, to track data points, to share data, to inventory, and do it in such a way that it's trustless, that you don't need humans involved because human error is taken out of the equation, and you can see how the algorithm is functioning in real time in a completely open and transparent way, whereas the banking system itself that we live and exist in, that banking system is completely opaque. It's very difficult to understand how central banking works. I mean, the basics of it are easy. You print money out of nothing and you give it to whoever you want, which means that while people are calling Bitcoin a scam, here's what Bitcoin can't do. When the central bank, the Bank of Canada, the Federal Reserve, they decide they're going to issue $1 trillion, they are literally taking the money right out of your pocket. They're taking value. They're not taking money. The money stays in your pocket. But what the money can buy is diminished. So all the talk about taxation and all the talk about pork barrel bills and all the stuff coming out of government, it is irrelevant and secondary to the real tax, which is inflation, which is why property, or part of why property prices are going up, why things inflate, why it takes more money to buy less food. It's because of the hidden tax called inflation. So every time the people at the top of the game, the top of the food chain, this is the big secret, the billionaires, whenever they get themselves in trouble, they just go to the central bank. The central bank prints a bunch of money, gives it to them, and they have stolen the value out of your pocket without you even feeling a hand going in to take it. The entire fiat currency system is the biggest scam ever perpetrated on mankind, and the people who are perpetrating the scam know it. And they've just rendered it legal. So back to Bitcoin. What can Bitcoin not do? Bitcoin cannot artificially replicate itself. It either has value or it doesn't have value, but it can't create wealth or value out of nothing. It only has as much value as the people who engage with it give it. And that's the same with any other blockchain. So the idea that BTC is a scam, it's completely untenable when you consider that the system, the financial system that you exist in right now, is the greatest scam that's ever been perpetrated on mankind. Bitcoin is superior in that way. If you don't like the fact that you can't hold it, if the concept of algorithmic money just escapes you, realize that fiat is nothing either. Fiat is less than nothing. At least with Bitcoin, you have the security of knowing how it works. It is fiat what fiat could be. Decentralized money. Money that you hold in your hand that nobody issues. Bitcoin isn't issued. It exists. It exists in a controlled way that you can see. And it's not just Bitcoin. It's Bitcoin Cash. It's Ethereum. It's all of these other projects. Some will come, some will go, but all will be needed because one network alone cannot handle the future of the crypto space. And that future is bright. It's going to revolutionize how the internet works. It's going to revolutionize how we transfer data. The destiny that we have to choose is not whether we implement it, because that's gonna happen. I think it's inevitable. There's risks because you could there's all kinds of things that can potentially wipe out the network. It's the same with fiat. It's the same with debt-based systems. If there was a big global war, the disruption is going to be monumental. But while we're in this world, while we're in this civilization, while we're trading value back and forth, the thing that BTC has, even though it's early and it has a high fluctuating price, it's being traded like a commodity, over the course of time, these crypto networks will gradually, if they're left to themselves, not only displace fiat currencies, they will displace centralized banking, and they will decentralize it back to the people. That's the potential of cryptocurrency. Now, I could get into it in a lot more detail, but I'll tell you something. It's a lot more than vaporware, and its potential is greater than that of fiat in terms of liberating humanity. You think you have freedom now. You think you have the freedom to trade and buy and engage and all these things, and we know there's limitations. The government can come in. They can dictate what you can own. They can dictate what you can sell. In fact, they're doing it in the name of COVID-19. You see all kinds of stores forbidden to sell retail. You have to buy online. They're telling you what you can do with your own property. That is one of the first footsteps towards full communism. That's not extremism. That's not hyperbole. That's history. If people understood their history, they would recognize the signs all around them. Cryptocurrencies and crypto technology, blockchain, is an end run around communism. It's a way for people. It's the Atlantean currency. In Ayn Rand's book, Atlas Shrugged, there was this place called Atlantis, and it was where the productive people, the makers, not the takers, it's where the makers went for refuge. It's where the makers, in that case, they used gold to trade back and forth. Nothing was socialized. Everything in the concept that Ayn Rand spells out, everything was paid for by mutual exchange and productivity. And when it came to charity and people getting hurt, the community took care of it voluntarily. Bitcoin or Bitcoin Cash or whatever cryptocurrency or whatever blockchain ends up implementing some sort of financial system that it obtains that mass adoption has the potential to be the Atlantean currency, the thing that does an end run around the central banks. Now, you can traditionally store your value in gold and silver and these things, but it does not solve the problem of fiat. And you can back currency against gold. But we've been playing that game for 100 years, and we haven't gotten back there. This is another way of doing it. I'm not saying it's the ultimate way to do it. But what I am saying is calling it a scam when you're trading in dollars is desperately naive. One more place I want to visit before we move on to talking about the election coverage to finish this off is a tweet I made the other day, and I'm going to build on this. Why not just put a Star of David on me, Ford Nation? This is directed at Doug Ford, who is the premier of my province, the equivalent of a governor. In loose terms, very different powers, but in loose terms, the equivalent of a governor. David Pacini, who's also my local member of provincial parliament, he's the guy I vote for. Do this, and I'll do everything in my power to make sure you never get back in office. I'd rather support the NDP. For those of you out there who don't know, the NDP is basically Canada's Communist Party. If we're going to go full communist, might as well vote for the party that doesn't pretend. And I mean it. Why would I vote for a party that pretends to be different, pretends to be something else, when they're just more of the same? Let's vote for the people who will at least tell us how bad they're going to screw us. Then we can get it out of our system again. We seem to have to go through this every 80 to 100 years. So let's just get it over with. Burn the thing down so that we can build it back up. And maybe next time we can educate our children so that we don't repeat the process. We've slowly diluted our education system since the 1970s. It's become more and more quote unquote progressive. And we're progressing right towards what is called democratic socialism, but it's just a fancy word for communism. And that's where we're going. Now they're saying, if you don't take this vaccine, you're going to have restrictions on your movement. They doubled down. Christine Elliott, who's another member of the Ontario government, I believe our health minister at this stage, came out and said, yeah, you're going to face restrictions on your movement, where you can go, what you can do, how much PPE. They're going to take healthy people, folks, healthy people with nothing wrong. They're going to make us mask. They're going to make us wear protective equipment in public. They're going to ostracize us. Again, why not just put a Star of David on me? A big old yellow star. I said to a Jewish friend of mine the other day, as he was actually saying, I think I'm going to get a mask and I'm going to put a Star of David, a yellow Star of David on it with Jude right in the middle of it. I said, dude, do it. I don't think he's actually going to do it. He's not that kind of guy, but it's like, dude, do it. I said to him, I wish I was Jewish right now because I would be doing exactly that. This is the type of practice. And people say, oh, you're being extreme. It's not the same thing at all. This is how it started. The Germans didn't think it was extreme either. They thought it was just labeling a parasite in their society by putting a Star of David on them. And look what it turned into. Healthy people with nothing wrong, who've done nothing wrong, a person like myself who's managed to not get COVID since before the government even would admit it was a thing. Back when the government said masks were dangerous, it's nothing more than a flu, it's nothing more than the common cold. Even as we were seeing all the stuff, they let it into the country. Now they're destroying our economy. And the best part about this is they're saying this vaccine is the ticket back to our freedom, that the vaccine is going to beat COVID. We're not fighting COVID anymore here, folks. We're fighting the tyranny of government. All of these restrictions and all of this freedom of movement stuff that we're dealing with, all of this perversion of our rights and the whole thing, that is a product of the state, not the respiratory infection, which seems to leave healthy people majoritively unscathed. Look, if you've got diabetes, you got a heart condition, you got cancer, you can get a normal cold and it can kill you. You can get the flu and it can kill you. That's just reality. That's part of life. None of us get out of here alive. Something gets us all. But now we're faced with this respiratory infection that kills a lot of our elderly people in long-term care facilities. From earlier in this video, I talked about that. Look, you're sticking a lot of people with immunocompromised systems in long-term care facilities. When an outbreak happens of anything, fatalities go up. It's not really all that different from what we were doing before. But all of a sudden, we have to have lockdowns. We got to have restrictions of movements. We got to suspend our civil liberties. We got to get rid of the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. We got to suspend the Bill of Rights. We got to live in a nightmare scenario where we got to be afraid forever. This thing is not what we thought it was when nobody was talking about it. It's not even close. So we're not trying to fight COVID. They're trying to impose their will. All of the long-term consequences of COVID, the ongoing onslaught against our rights, that is a product of government intervention. And here are the reasons why I will not take the vaccine. In fact, it's not a matter of non-compliance. I'll wear whatever they want me to wear. Put the Star of David right on me. I will march around in public, proud of being ostracized. Because if that's what you want to do, I'll make myself an example. Persecute me. Put me on a cross. I don't care. I'm not doing this. Chief Medical Officer says Canadians who refuse vaccine won't have freedom to move around. Screw you, buddy. I will see you at the Supreme Court. We'll find out if we have any rights in this country. FDA confirms Pfizer vaccine 95% effective, warns of severe adverse reactions after second dose. There's nothing to worry about here, folks. That's what they tell you. Racing through development of a vaccine, not letting it have time to go through the proper regulatory hurdles, it's fine. The medical industry has your back. Except the medical industry has a record, a well-established record of malpractice and malfeasance. The United States has a vaccine damage fund. I can't remember the actual name of it off the top of my head. Billions of dollars in settlements because vaccines can screw people up. Does it mean it screws everybody up? It certainly does not. But even the established vaccination schedule, regardless of what vaccine you're talking about, carries with it a risk. You can challenge me on that all day. The problem is the pamphlet that comes with the vaccine, which none of you read, expressly declares the risk. Now, like I said all along, I've been vaccinated my entire life. I don't take the flu shot because it's not worth the risk. I don't take the HPV shot because it's not worth the risk to me. And I am not taking the COVID shot. Adverse reactions after dose two. So under the risk, the vaccine has been shown to elicit increased local and systemic adverse reactions as compared to those in the placebo arm, usually lasting a few days. The most common solicited adverse reactions were injection site reactions, fatigue, headache, muscle pain, chills, joint pain, and fever. Now, I've heard the same thing coming out of other vaccinations. I have a friend who was never vaccinated, had to, for work purposes, had to go and get vaccinated. They decided to do that. And they experienced 6 months of illness from the, I believe it's the MMR, screwed them right up. And this is in adulthood, screwed them right up. What are the long-term consequences of that screw up? These things are never explored. There's been no time to map with the COVID-19 vaccine what the long-term consequences could actually be. They don't know. And this is not, this is a different type of vaccine. It has to be delivered ice cold, has to be stored a certain way, has all kinds of additives and different things in it. You have no idea what you're getting into. This is why I'm making the educated choice for myself to not take this thing, and I'm pretty sure my household's going to be in the same boat. So if you want to treat me like a Jew in Nazi Germany, you go right ahead. I will do that proudly. I'm sure you've heard about the deaths in the trials and the people getting sick in the COVID-19 trials. These are not isolated incidents. They're happening. But just like everything else, the media only reports certain things. They do not report countervailing facts. In a newspaper or a media release, you should get both sides of the equation. I'm not telling you not to get the COVID-19 vaccine. If you want to go and do it, you go ahead and do it. I will gladly watch you do it, and we'll see what happens to you. As for me, I'm going to wait a little while. But this is an interesting one. Cornell U offers exemption to mandatory flu vaccine policy for BIPOC students. Now, what is BIPOC? Black, Indigenous, or as a person of color, can apply to be exempt from mandatory vaccine rule if it makes them uncomfortable for reasons that most may find perplexing. So, in this conversation about so-called white privilege and all this stuff, there's all of these systems, all of these legal regimes, and not legal, but policy regimes that are set up in institutions that favor one race over another, and it's not white people. And what is white people? I've argued that before. White people don't exist. We are Hungarians and Canadians and Americans and Germans and French and British. A German is not a Frenchman. A Frenchman is not a Brit. An Italian is not the same as a Greek. There's great diversity, but we're denied our diversity. And I say our. I'm Indigenous, I'm French, and I'm English. Altogether, I'm about as well-rounded a Canadian as you could possibly get. I'm the exact sort of hybridized mix. I'm an example of the nation itself. But let's face it, I grew up Western, which many would typically call white. There is no intrinsic advantage anymore for white Europeans. In fact, you're discriminated against consistently and constantly. And worst part is you're discriminated against in the name of equality. But what they're creating a two-tiered system where if you're black or Indigenous or a person of color, you can get out of a vaccine policy. You can get special programs that are tailored to you to try and push you into areas and fields of study which have been proven over and over again to have no results on outcomes. In fact, it seems to be more harmful than good, all of these egalitarian programs that create a two-tiered lifestyle. They're not creating equality. They're actually creating the division. They're creating segregation. This is another example. What about a black person or an Indigenous person or a person of color, which can be a great big rainbow, except, of course, if you're Eastern European or Western European or just an American or a Canadian? What makes you so special that you get out of this policy? There's no justification for it, that one race gets it and one race doesn't get it. But this is the sort of madness that we are heading into right now, and it's a madness that we're a ways from coming out of because it's so pervasive. You have a media industrial complex that only wants to convey propaganda. They don't talk about news. They only do propaganda. You watch a 6 o'clock news report, and all I think is Joseph Goebbels or people in the Soviet system or in the Chinese system would be proud of the fact that only one point of view is being conveyed, only one type of expert is being invited on, only one outcome is allowed. That's not media. That is propaganda, and it's worldwide. It's a ubiquitous, propagandized media culture. And humans, our minds, our mental freedom, our physical freedom is up against this ubiquity. We got to fight it. Now, onto the election in the United States, which is going to determine world history from here forward. There is a counter-historical narrative. I've been harping on that point in my videos, but you have to understand how important this is. This is a divergence point. This is a fulcrum. Human history from here on out will be written in two different ways. It will either be written in the way that is honest and truthful, fights for the facts, gets to the bottom of things, and lays it out for the record so that our children can learn from it, or the counter-narrative will win, which will write a new history that has nothing to do with what actually happened. This has happened throughout the course of human history to the point where nothing that we think we know about the past can be 100% absolutely ascertained because we are so duplicitous. There's nothing new about human nature. But let's just talk for a minute about the no evidence exclusive. This is, and these are all mainstream sources, so I'm just going to rapid fire this. I'm not going to go into details. Exclusive. The FBI's investigating voter data theft in this key 2020 battleground state. On the morning of November 5th, as the 2020 election hung in the balance, Arizona federal agents raided a two-story home in Fountain Hills, Maricopa County that had become a key battleground in the presidential race. The agents were looking for evidence of a cyber attack in an unnamed organization and stolen voter data. All I want to make a point here is that the FBI is involved in this. If there's no evidence, why is the FBI raiding homes? That's just one. Data expert, up to 300,000 fake people voted in an Arizona election, biggest fraud in history. Now listen, these hearings, it is absolutely abominable the way the media is treating these hearings. I'm going to see if I can actually find a picture that I saved the other day. Here it is. CBC, this is Canadian state broadcaster, the number one state broadcaster. It's pretty much all state broadcasts these days in Canada, but CBC is the one that takes the most of our tax dollars. Rudy Giuliani tests positive for COVID-19. And the picture is the dye leak. Why does the CBC and all the media organizations constantly post pictures of Rudy Giuliani looking weird and with dye rolling down his head? This is an editorial choice, but labeled as news. There's a million pictures of Rudy. They don't pick one where he's at Ground Zero on the morning of 9/11. They don't pick anything from his long history. This is the picture they keep choosing over and over and over again. Now, I'm not trying to fault or I'm not trying to absolve Rudy Giuliani and his team for letting him go out in a situation where he's going to be under pressure and sweating with something in his hair that will run down the side of his head. Like, that's a gross oversight. There's nothing that takes away from that. But they will not cover the content of the hearings. And the content of the hearings is incredible, which is why I'm always saying, watch the hearings, think for yourself, because this isn't about Trump. This is about history. This is about the course of human destiny. If this sort of thing stands, if these propaganda organizations are allowed to convey this image, this is the best that they can do, without ever really giving any coverage to what's being stated. The lineups of people that are coming forward, former military, brigadier generals, people in private industry, people who work in election security, people with all the vast credentials needed to assess the situation are coming forward in sworn affidavits, risking perjury charges, presenting evidence and testimony as to what they witnessed, and they're not getting any fair shake from the media. Folks, wake up and smell the totalitarianism clutching around your neck. This is the end of your Republican democracy. It's not just the end of Republican democracy in the United States. It's the end of it anywhere in the world if they get away with it. And this is what they're doing. You see it all the time online, particularly from the academic circles, because the academic circles are all leftist these days. They laugh and they joke and they carry on. We saw a video yesterday of a teacher, a proud teacher, screaming and yelling and flipping people off, and she has access to your kids every single day. And there's a thousand, tens of thousands like her out there who are propagandizing your kids. This was occurring to me in high school back in the 1990s, where the socialists and the communists in a small town school, small town high school, were proudly socialist and communist, and they used their classrooms as a platform to promote their ideology. And I'm not just saying it, I experienced it. They tried to indoctrinate me in the UN. I went to a model United Nations thing where I represented a nation on earth, and for 3 days we played at being the UN. And this wasn't something that was part of the curriculum. I was identified as somebody that was politically interested, politically motivated, and politically literate. So my teachers came to me privately and said, hey, why don't you come up to this UN thing? And you go up there and you meet all these people and they make you feel real good about global governance and socialism and everything else. That was the 1990s. We are 20-odd years out from me being in high school. It's going on. It's mainstream. It's everywhere. Another article out of Arizona, challengers to Joe Biden's victory in Arizona will get documents they contend will cast enough doubt about the election results. So there's still challenges going on in Arizona. 4 takeaways from Arizona's election fraud hearing. You can read all about this and you can read about it in mainstream sources if you want to. Trump campaign files lawsuit in order to order new statewide election in Georgia to challenge tens of thousands of illegal votes. These things need to be heard at a higher court level because clearly the courts in the individual multiple states lack the motivation, lack the courage, lack the dedication to honesty when it comes to honest and fair elections to do the right thing. So it all rests on the individual state legislatures now and the Supreme Court of the United States to intervene. If the state legislatures don't do the right thing, if the Supreme Court of the United States doesn't do the right thing, well, then this whole party's over. The whole charade of U.S. Republican constitutionalism is just done. It's been on the ropes for a long time, but we are approaching the inflection point of done. Georgia County can't find chain of custody records for absentee ballots. Why? I would allege that they've been destroyed because we have Dominion. Actually, I'll wait until we get to that. I know there's a Dominion thing in here somewhere. All 900 military ballots cast in Fulton County, Georgia, went to Joe Biden. Extremely unlikely that the military would vote for George Biden in such over 100% of votes. Come on, 100% of votes, military ballots for Joe? We have Cobb County response to second video circulated by Wynn Lud. Cobb County has responded to a second video making the rounds on social media after it was tweeted by Atlanta attorney Lynn Wood. Much of the social media commentary in question, including the tweets by Wood, accused the county of illegally shredding evidence of voter fraud in the November 3rd general election. You know what? We're going to talk about destruction of evidence separately. This is all just to illustrate that it's going on. Georgia witness and hearing, Mark Davis, president of Data Productions. So this is just one example that you could watch if you wanted to from the hearing, which is a data analytics expert speaking to what actually went down. These aren't just halfwits. The media wants to call them halfwits and just, you know, a clown and pony show. You see things like Saturday Night Live skits and all these so-called comedy things, which is, again, I pick on Joe Rogan a lot because he's so naive. He thinks that Colbert and these people are just making jokes and trying to get clicks and all this stuff. It's lies. They're propaganda. They're not comedy. It's where the leftists get their news these days is from comedians. It's insane. Meanwhile, the boring stuff. Somebody explained this to me. They said, the reason people listen to you when it came to the Pennsylvania hearings, I put out a video saying, watch these videos. So that video got like 4,000 views, but the Pennsylvania hearings themselves, I don't even think they've hit 2,000, and hopefully people are watching them from other sources. But I said to this guy in frustration, I'm like, why are people listening to what I say more than they're listening to the actual meat and potatoes? And he said to me, meat and potatoes are work. The hearings are work. Listening to you is more entertainment. I thought, that's it. That's the key to everything. That's why people go to Colbert. They want to be entertained more than they want to be informed. They want to be laughing. They want to be laughing instead of literate, which is a huge part of the problem. Trump legal team celebrates after Michigan judge allows probe of Dominion voting machines. Look, this is important. Dominion closed their offices in Toronto. They packed up and left town after being up all night probably shredding papers. They've illegally moved machines. That'll probably get covered in this video. They've illegally removed machines pending a court order. They have done everything in their power that would lead one to believe there's a cover-up. Otherwise, they would have left everything in place. They got nothing to hide. It's like, you know what? Do all the investigating you want. The election was fair. And our reputation as a voting machine vendor, as a company that underwrites votes, as a company that manages votes at a national level for political parties, Liberal Party of Canada, Conservative Party of Canada, elections all across South America, this is our business. So we have every reason to be open and transparent so that our business reputation is maintained. The only reason they would hide things, they would move to be deceptive, is if they have something to hide, as if their reputation is an illusion. Their behavior is opposite for what you would think an honest player would do. There's no other reason for it. They hide behind proprietary code. Look, if forensic investigators are resisted from access to your proprietary code, a proprietary code which runs elections machines, which dictates the outcome of elections in nation states, there's a big problem. It should be transparent and open, and there's no other reason. There's no other reason to try and hide things unless you got something to hide. Four takeaways from the Michigan Senate's election fraud hearing. Again, it's just it's in the news. This is all I'm trying to point out. Dead voters, vacant addresses, a referendum with only two choices. You can read all about it. CNN's not going to tell you on screen. In Nevada, a corrupt cash for vote scheme is hiding in plain sight. So this is where they went around and they gave out Visa cards and cash cards and gift cards to indigenous members of the community to vote. The Democrats did this. So they paid, they tried to edge the law. They tried to skirt right across the edge of what was legally allowed by paying people to vote. That's not democracy. Like that in Canada would result in criminal charges. I don't know what's up with the United States. Trump legal team, we have found so much evidence of fraud in Nevada, we had to rent a separate car to carry it. The evidence is ubiquitous. It's there. It's crystal clear. All they want to do is show you pictures of Rudy Giuliani with dye rolling down his face. Like it's, as a matter of fact, I haven't even taken it off the screen yet. I think I'm just going to leave this in. I think I'm going to leave that mistake in, even though it means you can't see the news that I was reporting. I'll just flip back through it. This is an article up at the Federalist, which you should, the Federalist is a great journalist, the Daily Signal. This one's moved on to phishing, so we'll just get rid of all that. Nevada fraud, 1,500 dead voters, 42,248 voted multiple times, RV camps as homes. There was also casinos listed as residencies. There's people who have are in the voter registration database who say they never registered. People who voted in the federal election, they're registered, and they've been verified to have voted, who themselves say, I did not vote. How does that happen? The question has an answer. It's very easy. Justice Alito moves up Supreme Court deadline in key Pennsylvania mail-in ballot case. All of these cases need to land at the Supreme Court. And the reason they need to go to the Supreme Court is because once and for all, there has to be a decision made as to whether or not the United States is going to slip into socialist totalitarianism or it's going to be a Republican democracy. It literally comes down to this moment in time. Up to 280,000 ballots disappeared after trip to Pennsylvania from New York, Amistad Project Director. Where did they go? Doesn't anybody care? Like when you have, what was the number, 1.8 million mail-in ballots were mailed out to residences, but they got 2.5 million back. And I believe, coming up next, yeah, tens of thousands of Pennsylvania ballots returned earlier than the date sent. Earlier than the date sent. Researcher. They call it researcher. No offense to the Epoch Times. They're great. And that's another one, the Epoch Times. I mean, they receive this bad reputation from the media. And I've seen this in Canada where when the Epoch Times was running critical stories about COVID-19 when it was largely isolated to China, the Canadian media flew cover for the Chinese government and said the Epoch Times was just a bunch of extremists. Their definition of extremism is politically expedient. Falun Gong, or members that are close to Falun Gong, have funded the Epoch Times. These are Chinese dissidents. These are pro-democracy advocates fighting totalitarianism. Members or links to Falun Gong, which is just a bunch of people who do Tai Chi. And that was the thing. They were doing Tai Chi in China. They were gathering in parks. They were developing this mass movement not to politically unseat the government, but to do Tai Chi and advance their own spiritual health. The Chinese government felt that that was such a threat. They moved in, killed who knows how many people, jailed thousands of others, and broke up the entire movement, and it became a resistance. That's the history of Falun Gong. They're not extremists. They're not crazy religious nut jobs. They're just people trying to do Tai Chi. Not even trying to overthrow the government. No weapons, no arms, no rebellion. And ever since, Western media has been flying cover. These are people we should be celebrating. Dissidents from Tibet and Hong Kong and areas of China that have been under acute repression, who escaped to Canada to get away from that communist hellhole, and then they got to watch the Canadian government spend billions of dollars helping China, or letting billions of Chinese capital get washed, get rinsed, get laundered through the Canadian real estate system. Watch as China buys up the oil sands, buys up our gold and mineral resources, buys up farmland by the thousands upon thousands upon thousands of acres all over this nation as we get gutted by commies. And then people wonder why I get frustrated. I can't talk about this stuff without getting excited because this is my future. This is my children's future. And we're giving it away to the same old shadow of nightmare that we always seem to deal with every 80 years. We're supposed to be advanced. We're supposed to be beyond this. This is supposed to be the peak of civilization. And yet here we are regressing, and we call it progressive. It's Orwellian, and the Orwellianism continues as the assault on any kind of media company that actually provides a different point of view from the established media companies like CNN, NBC, CBC, these companies that parrot the exact same talking points. I saw somebody the other day was singing Rosemary Barton's praises on it was actually the Canadian COVID virus Reddit forum, and they were talking about how great Rosemary is, and it's like, she can't ask a tough question from a liberal to save her life, but when she excoriates some milk toast conservative And I say Milquetoast because they're all the same. They're cut from the same cloth. She asks some difficult questions, and they're just like, oh, she's so amazing. Even though she can't summon the courage to ask a single decent question of the prime minister or anybody that she's given access to. They fawn for access. They fawn over Justin Trudeau like he's some kind of hero. But while that's going on, here's another thing they ignore. Calls for special counsel to investigate Hunter Biden laptop scandal so probe is free from political interference. This is a big deal. This is such a big deal. It's as big a deal as anything else I've discussed in this video. With the Bidens coming into office, here's just an example. Biden chooses Raytheon board member, retired General Lloyd Austin, as Secretary of Defense. This is the guy who was instrumental in arming and ramping up the Syrian civil war using American weaponry and arms. All the lobbyists are coming back in a Biden presidency. All the old warmongers, like I'm often asking, where's the anti-war left? What happened to the people who wanted to bring the troops home? Trump is struggling right now. If he doesn't maintain a second presidency, he's doing everything in his power to get troops out of Somalia. Most Americans don't even know there's troops there. Trying to get the troops out of Afghanistan. Trying to complete the promise that he made. The very reason I supported him so strongly in 2016 was that he was the peace candidate. As the media was ubiquitous, saying that how scary a thing would it be with Trump with the nuclear codes. Now they're willing to give it to a senile old pervy bugger by the name of Joe Biden. They're going to let him have it. He grabs children's crotches on TV and grabs their boobs and talks about how kids play with the hair on his legs, strange kids, like not your own kids, but other people's kids. The guy's a creepy old perv, and he's half senile, and they're going to give him the nuclear codes, no problem. But Trump, the peace candidate, Trump, the guy who said going into Iraq was a mistake. George W. Bush did not keep America safe because 9/11 happened under his watch. It was the Saudi connection that Trump pointed out in 2016. He said things I'd never heard a politician say because he wasn't a politician. But we struggled with the same thing back in 16 that we struggle with right now, and that is that people aren't listening. They want to have the media tell them what to think. It makes them comfortable. Turn on the telly, get your 15 minutes, turn on the CNN website, get your 15 minutes of information, and then go on with your self-indulgent life. As we get more obese, as we get sicker, as we get more self-centered, as we get more narcissistic. Oh, I got to make a TikTok video. TikTok. Over my dead body. It's the same struggle. And the worst part is that the good that's come out of the Trump administration, and I've been critical of Trump. Many of you out there will remember, those of you who are actually paying attention to the things I said, because there's a whole pile of you who don't pay attention. You just show up. You don't even watch the content. You just start dropping bombs in the comments, and you don't even know what the hell I said. You're just hypocrites. You're more of the same. You're supposed to be positioning yourself as different. There's this guy, Nick, who showed up the other day. And I, like I said before, from here on out, if you're an idiot, you're getting put in the block tank. And I'm going to take you back out and see if your behavior's improved. And if it isn't, I'm going to put you back in there. Because you waste time. You waste time. You want to be right, but you don't actually want to put in the work. And you don't understand that you can't be right all the time. And the majority of people, I think, want to hold to the illusion that they've never been wrong. I have no issue with being wrong about things. In fact, when I am wrong, it's generally good news for everybody else. So to sum it all up, it's down to you. It's down to you cutting through the lies and the deception and the propaganda and getting to the heart of the matter and understanding that right now, this administration, this Biden administration, if it actually gets in, all the lobbyists are back. All the war hawks are back. All the neocons and neoliberals are back. The globalists are back. The people who want war with Russia are back. And I shouldn't have to tell anybody how bad a war with Russia would be for all the shared inhabitants of this world. They talk about one world. They talk about how, is anybody an illegal immigrant anywhere? Because we have one world, one big happy family. Well, a war with Russia means we ain't one big happy family. It means we're one big dead family. It's a bad thing. It's been a bad thing for 4 years. That's why I supported Trump in the first place, because he wanted a detente with Russia. A detente with Russia. A relationship with the Kremlin. is one of the only ways to check the advance of China. And China is the world's totalitarian power. The Russians are trying to hang on to their traditional sphere of influence as they've been encroached upon by NATO and surrounded. And China's surrounded too, truth be told. Make no mistake that America is an empire, a global empire. And Trump's impetus, his reason for being in 2015 and 2016 was about winding down the empire. I said back then, America is about to go through a decline and transformation. It has to happen. All nations do this. Nothing is eternal. A new form of America, a new way of being, has to come out of the dissolution. It's a dissolution and a reconstructive phase. And 2016 was a choice about what parties managed it. And I think America made the right choice. Well, now you're faced with another choice, a much harder choice. Because if the Supreme Court takes up these cases, if they do the right thing, and the state legislatures actually appoint electors that are contrary to what people believe the popular vote is, it's going to be chaotic. It ain't going to be easy. It's a hard choice. But the other side of that coin, to let it all stand, well, that's an even harder choice. It's easy now, but the long-term pain will greatly outweigh the short-term gain. And it won't be much of a gain. Joe Biden's promised you that. He's promised you perpetual decline into a long, dark winter. Am I the only one that thinks that's a problem? Am I the only one that sees a long, dark winter does not sound overly promising? I don't think I am, and I don't think the majority of Americans are. I think the difficult choice has to be made. America is under threat. There is an insurrection. There is a treason afoot. And if they don't sort it out, it's going to be bad news for all of us, all of our hopes, and all of our dreams. I'm Frank Vaughn. If you want to buy me a coffee, you want to support my research, you want to support the time it takes, you can go to the website, frankvaughn.ca. All the information is there. Please use these, distribute them freely. I do this 100% without any advertising or sponsorships or compilations or anything. I've outfitted the office out of my own pocket. I'm not claiming any write-offs on this stuff. So if you want to help out, please do, frankvaughn.ca. Again, Saga 960 tomorrow morning. Looking forward to my conversation with Mark Petroni, one of the best, if not the best, radio programs in Canada right now. Did you know that I have a website, frankvaughn.ca? It's the ultimate repository for all of my work, including the videos and audio-only podcast links, which you can also find on Spotify, iTunes, and a dozen different platforms. If you like the work, please consider clicking the donate link and supporting it either on a monthly basis or a one-off basis. I take crypto, Bitcoin, Neblio, e-transfer, PayPal. It will never be behind a paywall. What it is worth is up to you. Please consider supporting at frankvaughn.ca.